It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent podcasts and our most recent op-eds. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And on the website is the recaps and podcasts of all of our past shows. There's all kinds of great information there. It is Thanksgiving week. I wish each and every one of you a very blessed Thanksgiving. And there is a lot to be grateful for, even though we are in a stressful time for a lot of people. There is a lot to be grateful for. Focus on our blessings. They are many. And one of the things that I am very excited to say is a great blessing is this great team that I get to work with, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. And I'm also very grateful for each of you listeners. You each have a purpose. Strive for excellence today. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. If you're new to the show, we always like to look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. Socialism is not about free stuff. That is the carrot to try to get people to vote for socialism. But once you're into socialism, it's all about force. And we are Americans. We're freedom-loving people. And we need to remember that and always strive to make the individual bigger and the government and the bureaucracies smaller. And that is why we take a look at all of these issues every Monday through Friday, producer Steve.
Yes, we do. And it seems to be almost an eternal challenge.
Yes, it's not that we don't have things to talk about. It's like which things will we talk about? Patty puts together all kinds of different headlines for perspective, and it's difficult sometimes to choose because they all seem so important. But I wanted to let you know that a listener reached out to me to ask that we ask you listeners to reach out to our legislators, our Secretary of State, and our county clerk and recorders regarding the Dominion voting systems, and ask that if they are secure, and ask whether or not they have been manipulated. And I think that that's a really important thing to do right now. And my understanding is that the Dominion voting system is being used in all Colorado counties except Garfield and Douglas County. If that's incorrect, please let me know. But the best way to do this is to just search, and I use DuckDuckGo, which is a different search engine from Google, and they don't track you. And so that is DuckDuckGo. Were you familiar with them, Steve?
No, you were the first one to educate me on that one. The first time you said it, what did you just say?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Unusual name, but I'm sure there's some significance there somewhere.
I'm sure there is, and I want to find out what that is. But again, it is a search engine that does not track you. It's a competitor to Google, and you might consider using that as your search engine.
And enunciate, however you would say this, in terms of the letters you're typing, the word duck, and again, duck, go, is that the way it works?
Like duck, duck, like quack, quack, go. So duck, duck, go.
Okay.
And that should be your new search engine so that Google is not tracking you. And I know a lot of people are moving off of Facebook. They're moving off of Twitter. We're going to be trying to figure out what we're going to do exactly with all that as well. But that's one of the things to do in a free society is to be able to have other choices. And DuckDuckGo is a great alternative to your Google searches. So again, that's DuckDuckGo. I would recommend that you just go to them and again, put in Colorado legislators and then the Colorado Secretary of State and then you could put in the county. And I put in like Douglas County, Colorado, clerk and recorder, and that will get you to that contact information, Steve.
Okay, I'm going to try it. While you're talking, I'm going to try it.
Aha. Okay, that sounds good. Our quote for today is by our guest. Bill Federer is our guest for today. He's an author, a speaker, nationally syndicated radio host of the American Minute, which is heard right here on KLZ 560. And he will be our guest in the second, third, and fourth segments. We'll talk with Jason McBride at the bottom of the hour. And Jason is a senior VP with Prudential Wealth Management. But I thought it very appropriate to use Bill Federer quotes. And this is from a publication he has, Change, C-H-A-N-G-E, to Chains, C-H-A-I-N-S, The 6,000-Year Quest for Control, The Rise of the Republic. That is his volume one. And this is what he said. He said, the country is controlled by laws. Laws are controlled by politicians. Politicians are controlled by voters. Voters are controlled by public opinion. Public opinion is controlled by the media, so the news, Hollywood, internet, and education. So whoever controls media and education controls the country. Steve, the radical activist left has understood this. And it has been, I think, a real march since the 60s to get control of media and education and many of the big nonprofits. And now we see even that control in many of our corporate boardrooms. And I had always wondered what could happen to disrupt all of this. And can you say Donald Trump? Like him or dislike him? He has brought clarity to these issues. He has ripped the mask off. He has unmasked what has been percolating underneath the surface. And they're now saying, Steve, that Donald Trump received 10 million more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016. And we've talked about it. Barack Obama received less votes in 2012 than he did in 2008. It actually defies logic that, in fact, Donald Trump received that many more votes. And again, the jury is still out on if these votes have been flipped and a variety of things. And that Joe Biden, who was in his basement for the whole election, could actually have gotten more votes than Barack Obama did in 2012. Maybe he'd get a few more votes because our population has grown a bit. But no way, it defies reason that Joe Biden would have gotten more than Barack Obama and outpaced Donald Trump. It just doesn't pass the smell test with me, producer Steve.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, we throughout September and October, we all kind of joked about, well, what's Biden doing in his basement, assuming he was taking a nap. But with his own words, I think we ran the quote right here on the air the other week. Mm-hmm. He was busy improving on an exhaustive and comprehensive voter fraud network.
And that is straight. He said it.
Yes, he did. Right out of his mouth.
And he said it.
And the two dim bulbs who were interviewing him. Yeah, the mm-hmm. two guys who were interviewing him, it didn't even raise an eyebrow. They just let it go. Like, oh, well, that's cool.
Well, and I think that Biden probably let it slip because he felt that he was with friendlies. And Dr. Jill is the one, I heard the quote, but she recommended that we get that quote for a podcast. She said, Kim, it was hard to find. And I know she sent it over to you, and now you have it saved.
I do.
So we now have that, yes. But it defies reason on what is going on. And the quote that we had yesterday from Abraham Lincoln, you might want to go back and listen to that quote. It talks about a crisis that was occurring in our country back during the Civil War. I think that we have, granted, and hopefully we won't get to any kind of altercations in the streets at all, but we are in a moral, constitutional, political crisis right now. And if this Constitution is not upheld, and we're going to be in a world of hurt, Steve.
Well, there's no strife in the streets yet. And I'm not saying there's going to be, but you get a sense that we're, as long as the left is placated and we don't make a whole lot of noise about the outcome of this election, you know, they'll behave themselves.
That's what they say.
Yeah, if we do not run out of time and if we actually start making some headway in this uphill battle, that's when probably the trouble's going to start.
Well, it's so interesting that you would mention that. I was going through emails the other day, and Nextdoor, you're familiar with that. That's the kind of the Nextdoor. I think it's kind of like neighborhood gossiping, but anyway, it's Nextdoor. And a guy had a picture on there, and he said that his brand new truck had been vandalized, and right here in our community, Steve, you and I live near each other, and that in fact they had broken all of the windows, and they had spray painted a Biden 2020 all over the truck. Now I have to ask you, is this the people that we want to have in charge of our communities that will resort to destruction and division? I mean, that's really what we're concerned about. And that's why with the whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, I mean, it's been very difficult. We've got to get our businesses back to work. But and we need to get them opened up. But there has been a silver lining, and that has been the disruption in the media, in education, so that we are taking a look at it and understand what's been happening. And I think that we can address it and we can change it, Producer Steve.
Well, you ask, are these the type of people we want in charge? And the answer is obviously no. What catches me by surprise, takes my breath away, is that normal standards of behavior that we've adhered to from the get-go, from, you know, 240 years ago, have been thrown out the window. And cheating is just fine. Cheating is no big deal. I mean, all the people who are very perfectly happy with a Biden win, you want to say, well, wait a minute. Your side, if we have to speak in those terms, did what they did only because they couldn't put up a decent candidate and Cheney was the only way to win, and you're happy with that?
Right. We need to make sure that we have just and fair elections. So that's why it's going to be just fascinating to talk with Bill Federer. But before we do that, I want to give a shout out to Hooters Restaurants. Through all this time, they have been very creative. They have all kinds of to-go specials. Wednesdays are Wings Day, so today it's on to-go only, not valid on delivery. You have a home edition. You can buy 20 wings. You get 10 free, and that's their breaded, naked, or boneless wings. For more information on what's going on there, check out HootersColorado.com. That's HootersColorado.com. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
God bless America.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent podcasts and our most recent op-eds. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. I am so excited to have on the line with me Bill Federer. You know him. He is an author, speaker, nationally syndicated radio host of the American Minute that you can hear right here on KLZ 560. Bill Federer, welcome to the show.
Kim, great to be with you.
When you go to theamericanminute.com, which is your website, you have written a number of very important books. I would encourage people to go and take a look at that. And we had you on recently to talk about your most recent one, which is Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present, which that is so timely given what's going on in America right now, Bill.
It definitely is. And I go through the tactics of how Lenin said socialism is a transition phase between capitalism and communism, and how do you transition in crises? And so you create or capitalize on crises to consolidate control. People in times of crises panic, and they're willing to give up all their freedoms. In the book, I go all the way back to Plato, and I talk about how in Athens, it's democracy. Demos means people. Krasi means rule. It's wonderful. And then the chief characteristic is tolerance, and they tolerate each other. Then they tolerate people that are a little bit off, and then they tolerate people that are a lot off, till finally they're tolerating crooks and crime and fraud and broad daylight looting, and nobody does anything about it. And then it turns into chaos, and the people panic, and they begin to say, can't someone come along and fix this mess? And that's when some governor comes along and says, I can fix it. I just need some emergency powers. And they first come out as the protector, full of smiles, but then finally they consolidate power, and they stand up in the chariot of state, holding the reins of power, and they're revealed as the tyrant. So democracy without morals and virtue ends in chaos out of which a tyrant arises. And this tyrant sets up a structured society of a ruling class and a ruled class, and that's what socialism is. It's a socially structured society of a deep state ruling class. Plato says that the tyrant king is the head of gold, and his deep state administrator, political cronies, are the arms and chest of silver. They're above the law, and then everybody else is the abdomen of iron and bronze. They are the worker class, and their purpose is to support the ruling class, and that's socialism. And the worker class own nothing. They have no private property. They have no privacy. The government even decides who gets to have children and takes the children away and indoctrinates them with noble lies. He says, we want one grand lie, which will be believed by everyone. And anyway, but that's the new book on socialism.
Well, I think everybody should probably get that and take a read on that, because what we have seen happen in the United States of America over this last year has been absolutely astounding. We have been in difficult times before, though, Bill Federer. And another, you actually have several different books on the miracles of American history. And I think we could, let's talk a bit about that, because I think we need some hope this week on the divine provider. He's had his hand on this country since our beginning. Where should we start with this to give our listeners hope, Bill Federer?
Well, the very fact that we came into existence in the first place, I wrote a book called Who is the King in America? I go through all the world's history and demonstrate the most common form of government is a king. And they go by different names: pharaohs, Caesars, Kaisers, Sultans, Tsars, Maharaja, Genghis Khan, Julius Caesar, Attila the Hun. And as the centuries go on, the kingdoms get bigger, because the guy at the top has new military advancements where they can kill more people. Instead of Cain killing you with a rock, that you can kill with a bronze weapon or an iron weapon or a big long phalanx spear the Greeks had, or a scimitar sword that the Muslims had, or gunpowder that the Chinese invented. The weapon changes, but it's that same fallen nature. And so with military advancements, a tyrant king can kill more people. And with technological advancements, they can track more people. I mean, here's Augustus Caesar wanting to have a worldwide census. I guarantee if he could have tracked everybody with computers and chips and drones and cameras, he would have done that. And so people say history repeats itself. Really, human nature repeats itself, and history is just a record of that. And with these military and technological advancements, the corrupt people try to make a bigger empire. Clearly, there's a global goal in mind. At the time of the country's founding, the King of England was the most powerful king on the planet. The sun never set on the British Empire. And America's founders decided they didn't like this globalist one-world government king telling us what to do. I mean, he controlled all of India, Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, you know, British Guyana, Jamaica, Barbados, Bermuda. They discovered the Sandwich Islands, Hawaii. And so America's founders broke away and actually flipped it and made the people the king. And the word citizen is Greek. It means co-king.
Really?
So where kings in Europe have subjects who are subjected to the king's will, in America, we're all citizens. We're all co-kings, right?
I hadn't thought about that.
And so our founding fathers, for all of their faults, they gave us a present where we get to be, in a way, the king of our own life. You get to decide where you want to live, who you want to marry, what job you want to pursue, what church you want to go to or not go to. You get to make all... In Europe, you couldn't make that. Right. Even today, in some of the countries, they're more socialist, where you take tests in school growing up and the government channels you into career paths. What if you get a little older and you want to switch and become a doctor? Sorry, you can't. And I've known people that have done that. If they score bad on a couple tests, that future is forbidden for them. I mean, the government pays for their education, but the government chooses which education they're going to get. Mm-hmm. I talked to some people in Egypt, and they said that the Christians in Cairo, Egypt, traditionally have been called garbage people because they were not allowed to hold jobs higher than Muslims, and so they would spend their day digging through garbage, trying to eke out a living. In India, they've had for millenniums a system called the caste system, and if you're in the highest caste, called a Brahmin, you are near divinity in their belief system, and the lowest is called the untouchables or Dalits, and their job is to clean the sewers and take care of the garbage. And even if they do a really good job, they can never graduate and move up the ladder. They're stuck. And then in atheistic communist countries, your worth is dependent on your utility. If you can serve the state and help the state can get more power, the state thinks your life is worth something. If you don't serve the state or you challenge or threaten the state uses its power to get rid of you. Well, in America, our founders looked back to the Bible, to ancient Israel, where you have a worth, not because of how much you can contribute to the state or whether you're a Muslim male or whether you're a Brahmin. No, you have worth simply because you are made in the image of the Creator. There's nothing that you do. You're just made in the image of the Creator, and everybody has been made in the, so everyone's equal. And then in ancient Israel, that first 400 years when they came out of Egypt, they had no king. And everyone was equal, and the law specifically says there's no respecter of persons in judgment, and everyone was taught the law. And everyone was personally accountable to God to follow the law. And so they had maximum freedom. And so if you think of power as a line, and one side is total government, the other side is no government. Total government, power concentrates into the hands of one person, a pharaoh, a Caesar, a sultan, and they rule through fear. You do what they say or they kill you. The other side is no government. That would be anarchy. Unless each citizen was taught the law. I liken it to each person downloading a behavioral app on their iPhone. Instead of a GPS telling you where to turn, imagine a behavioral app that tells you how to act in real time. Instead of turn left at, you know, 50 yards ahead, it's like, don't steal that off that table. Don't lose your temper, that person, right? And the Levites in ancient Israel were like the computer geeks that helped you to download the app. Like, where do you go? Okay, go to Apple's store, Google Play, press this button, download, line upon line, precept upon precept, and everybody downloads this behavioral app. But the big question is, why would you follow it? What would motivate you to follow an internal moral? Well, ancient Israel introduces the key ingredient. There is a God who is watching everyone. He wants you to be fair. And he's going to hold you accountable sometime in the future. So you're about to steal. Nobody's around. You know you can get away with it. And then you think, God is watching me. He wants me to be fair. He's going to hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. And it creates something in your head called a conscience.
On that note, Bill Fetter, let's go to break, because this is absolutely fascinating. Conscience. And in 2020 America, I think we need to talk about the American conscience. So this is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Bill Fetter, and we'll be right back. Hey, Jason McBride over at Presidential Wealth Management. You like to draw some of your wisdom from great business leaders. Who's somebody that really inspires you?
Well, I think Lee Iacocca is a great example. Not only was he a very good business leader, he was instrumental in turning around Chrysler Corporation when they really got in trouble the first time around anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was kind of just a straight shooter too, and that's one of the things I liked about him. You know, a little bit rough around the edges, but just a real straight, no BS kind of guy, which I really appreciate.
I like those kind of guys, yep.
So one of the things that Lee Iacocca said was, if little kids don't aspire to make money the way I did, what good is this country? And I think that that is a great quote. I think it's very smart to instill kind of an entrepreneurial spirit into our kids when they're young, or even just a spirit to work hard and to try to hustle and make money. And Kim, I know you mentioned that little kids running lemonade stands is a great example of that.
Well, it really is. And of course, it's funny that the regulators even want to get into that.
That's right. Now, kids, when you open your lemonade stand, first make sure you pull your permits properly from the city, report your payroll taxes, put your OSHA sticker on the wall next to the payroll that announces the minimum wage and all that, because you don't want any of your employees getting you in trouble.
That's for sure. And so Lee Iacocca, I do remember him as well. I love this quote, if little kids don't aspire to make money as I did, what good is this country? So people being entrepreneurial and being capitalist, he inherently understood that, Jason McBride.
Well, I think he did, and I think it's a very good lesson to learn to depend on yourself. I know I've tried to instill that in my kids, and I could say I think it's worked pretty well. They enjoy working. They enjoy earning their own money, and sometimes they enjoy just blowing their own money on things that I might think are silly. But again, that's how they learn.
That's
when
they've
learn. Blown it and they want something else. Dad, can I borrow some until I get my next allowance? Nope.
Okay. Well, there is dignity in work, and we need to continue to uphold that. So Jason McBride over at Presidential Wealth Management, be sure and check out our landing page with you. That is chickspresidential.com. chickspresidential.com. And thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, Kim. Thank you.
Predovich and Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich and Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
From the mountains to the prairies to
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. We wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving this week. Thrilled to have on the line with me Bill Federer. He is an author, speaker, nationally syndicated radio host of the American Minute, which you can hear right here on KLZ 560. And we're talking, before we went to break, about conscience. And let's continue on with that. First of all, the individual conscience, and then we can talk about the American conscience. But take that from there, Bill, our own individual conscience.
Right. Now, in ancient Israel's case, God knew that they would break the law, and rather than them walking around for the rest of their life feeling guilty, once a year they sacrificed an animal and brought the blood into the Holy of Holies and sprinkled it on the mercy seat. It's called the Day of Atonement, and everyone's sins in the whole country were forgiven. So you could start off the year with a clean slate. Now, those of us that are Christian understand that as foreshadowing Jesus. But the idea was that it's an individual accountability. But on a government level, there's a quote from Calvin Coolidge. He says, the whole system of American government rests on the ballot box. And I read through the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the different amendments. And it's interesting that the words ballot appear three times, votes, voting, and voting appear 15 times, and elect, elected, elections, electors, 18 times. Never once does the Constitution give instructions on how to have an honest election? So here, our whole form of government is based on the people expressing their will by voting, and they never tell you how to have an honest vote. Why? Because they assumed everyone was a God-fearing, honest person, no matter which party you belong to. It was Eisenhower that said, recognition of the supreme being is the first, most basic expression of Americanism. So that God exists and we're accountable to him. He wants us to be honest. And so when the majority of the country is this way, you can trust the elections. But John Adams said our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate for the government of any other. He says avarice, which is selfishness, ambition, revenge would break the cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. So if we don't have internal moral restraints, then all you have left is raw human passion. If there's no God, what's wrong with voter fraud? And so there's a Harper's Weekly magazine article in 1871, and it talked about the New York political boss. His name was Boss Tweed, and the cartoon said, as long as I count the votes, what are you going to say about it? So it's like, you know, you can do voter fraud. And then there's a Washington Post article on Lyndon Johnson and how he stole a 1948 Senate race to become a U.S. senator from Texas. And he writes, the morality of the ballot box, in which nothing matters but victory and whatever maneuver that leads to victory is justified. Johnson stole the victory in the 1948 Senate race in Texas. He won by 87 votes. They had found found a box of ballots on election night after LBJ lost and to Coke Stevenson, the Democrat governor. And so they had this confusion that reigned for a week, and at the end of the week, they found out that extra people had lined up and voted in alphabetical order in the same handwriting, the same color ink, and they were all names from the local cemetery. And that's how Lyndon Johnson became a senator.
It's like deja vu all over again, Bill Federer, what's happening now.
But so America, it's like a building and there's a foundation. And you sort of take the foundation for granted. I mean, it's just mud and rocks, you know. But if the foundation erodes away, the whole beautiful building collapses. And so we have this beautiful American structure. We've got House, Senate, we got the Supreme Court, we got president, we got all of it, but it's all based on elections. And if you, I tell somebody recently, I said, you know, if there's a party that can justify killing innocent babies and they mention it in their party platform, what's voter fraud compared to that? If you can mentally justify that, you can mentally justify anything. And that's where you get this ends justifies the means. That my goal is so good that I can do some of the unethical things to get there. And but Jesus never said, go out and lie, cheat, and steal to show the world I love them.
No.
So in other words, we play by God's rules because we're accountable to him. We do all that we can, and we trust him for the rest. And anyway, but in another book I wrote, it's called The Treacherous World of the 16th Century and How the Pilgrims Escaped It. We flash back to the era of the pilgrims, and the kings decided what was going to be believed in their kingdoms. So you had Catholic kings and, you know, different Protestant kings. But in England, you had an Anglican king. His name was Henry VIII. And he had William Tyndale burnt at the stake for translating the Bible into English. Then a few years later, he decides to divorce his wife, and the Pope won't recognize the divorce. So Henry VIII makes himself his own Pope. And his advisors say, well, if you really want to break from Rome, get rid of that Latin Bible and get yourself an English Bible. So they basically take William Tyndale's work and redo it, call it the Great Bible. They spread it around England. Henry dusts his hands, thinking that's it. We broke from Rome. But something unexpected happened. People began to read the thing and compare what's in the Bible to this king who's divorcing and beheading his wives. He went on to have six wives. And the group starts and wants to purify the Church of England. And he's like, I don't need any purifying. So he persecutes them. And there's another group that says, beyond hope of purifying, we are going to separate ourselves. And they would meet in secret, barns and basements, small little groups. and we called them the Pilgrims, right? And some of them became Baptists, some of them became Quakers. They believed in conscience, that one of the early Baptist founders, Thomas Helwys, who dies in the Newgate prison, he basically said, if the king can stand there on the day of judgment and answer for your conscience, fine, believe whatever the king tells you. But if the king is not going to be there on the day of judgment, you are accountable to God for your own conscience. Well, kings didn't like people saying that type of thing, right? But the separatists did. They fled to Holland. After 12 years, they fled to America. And they were going to land in Jamestown, which was a king-run colony. But they get blown off course 500 miles. They land in Massachusetts. They try sailing down the coast, but off the coast of Cape Cod, it's called the graveyard of ships. The sandbars go out like half a mile. You think you're way far away from the shore, and the boat gets stuck. And in a storm, it can smash your boat to pieces with the waves. And so the Pilgrims almost sink. The captain goes back to Plymouth Rock and says, everyone off the boat, it is too dangerous to do any more sailing. And the Pilgrims say, well, we have a question. Who's going to be in charge? There is no king-appointed person in our group. We were going to go to Jamestown, submit to the king's government. They do something unique that affected us today. They gave themselves the authority to start a government. It's called the Mayflower Compact, which means covenant. And it says, we, in the presence of God, covenant ourselves together into a civil body politic. Wow. In other words, they're creating their own political body. To enact just and equal laws, as shall be thought most meet or necessary, unto which we promise due submission. Simple revolutionary. It was a polarity change in the flow of power. Instead of top-down rule by kings and pharaohs and sultans, it's ruled by we. And in the womb of this little Mayflower, unnoticed, is this little DNA change, is this conception of this idea of a bottom-up form of government. And where did they get this idea? From their pastor, John Robinson, who was not an Anglican king-appointed pastor. He was what is considered a founder of the Congregational Church. This was a church model based on the early church, where everybody fasts and prays and votes, and it was this idea that everybody in the congregation is supposed to be involved in the ministry. The pastor's job is to teach them how. It either is faithful in the very little, is entrusted with more. It's different than the hierarchical model, where you have the clergy and the lady, and the clergy does all the ministry, and the lady's lazy and just sort of watches. No, this congregational model, they basically took their congregational church model and they made it their community model of government. They even had their government meetings in the church. They called them town hall meetings. I mean, why build a whole entire different building just to talk about, right? And all there was in these little towns in New England was the church members. And so you had a pastor, Thomas Hooker, and his church founded Hartford, Connecticut, and a pastor, Roger Williams, and his church founded Providence, Rhode Island, and the First Baptist Church in America. And there's a pastor, John Wheelwright, in his church founded Exeter, New Hampshire. And so this was unique on planet Earth, a little greenhouse taking place on the shores of America. And so the whole rest of the world is kings. Europe is the chessboard that all these kings are fighting over. America is an afterthought. And, you know, when they were pirates that, you know, Sir Francis Drake and Sir Walter Raleigh, and they would, you know, rob Spanish ships of gold and bring these ships back to England. And so they sort of thought that you know, the colonies in America were going to sort of bring in money. And they didn't. And they ended up going bankrupt and having malaria and Indian attacks. And the king finally decided that this American experiment is a waste of money. And so, you know, he doesn't want to. So it's sort of like for a century and a half, what was going on in America was sort of unnoticed by the king. Just don't cost me any money and stay out of my hair. You can sort of do what you want. And they did, and they had training wheels on, and they developed this self-government where the little communities would get together and they would vote on what they needed to do. And it wasn't until the British East India Company went bankrupt and they were trying to recoup their money by milking it out of the colonies, and they began to want to put in taxes, that the colonies started to become a little bit rebellious, like, hey, why are you changing this? And then the king, instead of being reasonable, decided to tighten the screws, and it turned into the revolution. But America's founders broke away from the most powerful king on planet Earth. The King of England was the most powerful monarch. He had this, a sun never set on the British Empire. He had, you know, India, Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, British Guyana. And so America, we had no army and really no navy and just a bunch of private individuals. And we pitch in together and we, lo and behold, break away from this most powerful king.
It's astounding. It's an astounding story, Bill Federer. And let's go to break. When we come back, then let's talk about the miracles of the American founding. This is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Bill Federer, and you know him. He's an author, speaker, nationally syndicated radio host of the American Minute. But before we do that, I want to give a shout out to one of my great partners, and that is Castlegate Knife and Tool, located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. They have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. The Saturday after Thanksgiving, is Small Business Saturday. And so recommend that you go out to Castlegate Knife and Tool in Sedalia and do some of your Christmas shopping, or check out their brand new website at castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We will be right back with Bill Federer.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
God bless America.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. Also, on the line with me is Bill Federer. He's an author, speaker, nationally syndicated radio host of the American Minute, which is heard right here on KLZ. We have been talking about kings and pilgrims, and we have now gotten to the point where the colonists hanging on the eastern seaboard of the American continent decide they're going to break away from the most powerful king and country on the face of the earth at that time because they wanted self-government. Pretty monumental task, Bill Federer.
Oh, definitely. And it wouldn't have happened had not the second biggest power in the world, France, jumped in. And when they did, Britain had to take all of its resources that it was focusing on putting out a rebellion in a little colony area, to now it's a global war. And so Britain has to fight the French all around the world, and it pulls their military resources, and pretty providential in helping us to break away. But in the book, Miracles in American History, I talk about a number of incidences that were amazing. So one of them, we had the British occupied Massachusetts, and the young 25-year-old Henry Knox goes up to Canada, drags down a bunch of cannons from Fort Ticonderoga. They put him up on a hill, the Dorchester Heights, overlooking the Boston Harbor. And the Massachusetts colony has a day of fasting and prayer to be observed on March 7th of 1776. And Washington orders his troops to observe the day of fasting and prayer, March 7th of 1776. Well, that's the very day that the British admiral, I think his name was Thomas Gage, but he looks up the hill and he sees these cannons on the highest hill in Boston Harbor, and the cannonballs with a trajectory are able to hit his ships. And so he is going to mount an attack at Dorchester Heights, But a storm comes out of nowhere, and it's so tempestuous, he can't even get his men on the ships. And after several hours, he finally gives up the attack attempt and sends a message to George Washington saying, "We're going to evacuate Boston. If you do not shoot at our ships, we won't torch the city on our way out." But this was the very day they were having a day of fasting and prayer, is the day that this storm came out of nowhere. Another is Brooklyn Heights. So after the British leave Boston, they fill up the New York Harbor. And, you know, the Americans are sort of high, you know, put some cannons on a hill, say a few prayers, the British leave. Well, Boston is small compared to New York. So 400 British ships fill up the New York Harbor, 32,000 troops. The number of masts on these ships is described as looking like a forest. So suddenly the whole, you know, bay turned into a forest of trees. And so the Continental Congress has another day of fasting and prayer. They rush it out to George Washington. He has it read to his troops. The day, it even says, "Through the merits and mediation of Jesus Christ, we obtain pardon and forgiveness." And anyway, so the British have a loyalist. What's that? That's somebody that lives in America, but they're loyal to the enemy. I know that's hard for us to imagine. And this loyalist shows the British where to land far away from the American position and march all night long through Jamaica Pass and attack Washington from behind. On August 27th of 1776, 3,000 Americans die, only 300 British. It is looking really bad. Besides, it's the entire American army. There's no second string. If it loses here, it's over. Washington looks at the brave Maryland regiment, these young men, 400 of them, and they charge six times directly into the British lines, and they all die. But they buy time for the rest of the army. Washington sees him from a distance, and he says, "Good God, what brave fellows I've lost this day." Well, the sun goes down, and the British have pinned Washington against the river, and the East River. And so here he is. He's got the river and the bay filled full of British ships. He's got these 10,000 British that snuck in and attacking him from behind. It looks pretty hopeless. And his chief of intelligence, Major Ben Talmadge, was there witnessing it. So Washington's trying to evacuate all his men, putting them on boats and rowing them across the East River to Manhattan Island. And they got about half the army across when the dawn starts. And Ben Talmadge, chief of intelligence, says, "As the dawn of the next day approached, those of us who remained in the trenches became very anxious for our own safety."
You think?
And he says, "At this time, a very dense fog began to rise off the river, and it settled in a peculiar manner over both encampments. I recollect this providential occurrence perfectly well. So dense was the atmosphere that I could scarcely discern a man at 6 yards distance. We tarried until the sun had risen, but the fog remained as dense as ever." So under the cover of fog, Washington is able to remove the entire rest of his army. Around noon, the fog lifts, the British charge, no one's there. This was the last chance the British had to capture the entire American army all at once. Washington later says, "The hand of Providence has been so conspicuous in the course of the war that he must be worse than an infidel that lacks faith." And so this was a miracle in American history. The war could have been over, and America could have been another British colony like Kenya or Egypt or India. And then another one is the British land in Canada, and now they're going to march down New York, the Hudson River Valley, to capture Albany, which is the capital. By doing that, the Hudson River actually splits not just New York in half, but America in half at the time, because the New England colonies were on one side, the Middle Southern colonies on the other, and the biggest military fort in America is on the Hudson River. It's at West Point. And so the British are marching down, and they make a treaty with the Mohawk Indians to butcher and scalp Americans. This is like a foreign government wanting to stir up rioting and violence on the streets of America. And so the British have a loyalist named David Jones, and he's living in a frontier village with his, he's about to get married to his fiancee, Jane McCrae. And he kisses her goodbye and says, "I'm going to join the British General Johnny Burgoyne. We'll drive these American rebels out, and then we'll get back to our life." And as the British are marching down the Hudson River Valley, the Indians are out in front, and at nighttime, they would kill and scalp Americans. and they couldn't tell who's an American, who's a British loyalist. We all sort of looked the same to them. And so they come upon this New York settlement, and they butcher and scalp, and they come in after their raiding parties with their scalps on long sticks, and they would gather in a circle and do their Indian dance called the scalp dance. And David Jones, who's with the British, sees this nice, long, beautiful scalp hanging off a stick, and he recognizes it, and sure enough, it was his fiancée. The British raided the town and killed her. And so he causes...
The Indians raided and killed her, right?
Did I say that? I think you said British.
Okay.
The Indians, working for the British, raided the town or the settlement and killed her. And so the soldiers go to this General Johnny Burgoyne and tell him, you've got to tell these Indians to tone it down. So he meets with them, and the Indians get offended and leave. And now you have an entire British army in the middle of the New York forest, and they don't know where they're at. The Indians have been their eyes and ears. So, and now the Americans have the advantage. They surround them, and they win the Battle of Saratoga. 6,000 British soldiers surrender. That would be a big deal today. Mm-hmm. 6,000 soldiers surrendered somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so this ricochets across the world. Ben Franklin goes into the court of King Louis the 16th and convinces him that we can win. And so he decides to join us. They put a painting of the surrender of the Battle of Saratoga on our U.S. Capitol Rotunda in Washington, D.C. You can go there and see it. And Washington writes to his younger brother, I most devoutly congratulate my country and every well-wisher to the cause on this signal stroke of providence. And, of course, the providence in the 1828 dictionary says, by providence, it is understood the will of God. And so after the Battle of Saratoga, the Continental Congress has the first National Day of Thanksgiving after the Declaration. So this is November 1st, 1777. It says, with one heart, one voice, confess our manifold sins, that it may please God through the merits of Jesus Christ to mercifully forgive and blot them out, and under the providence of Almighty God, secure for the United States the greatest of all human blessings, independence and peace. And so that was the Battle of Saratoga. There's a couple more. I don't know if I have time.
Well, Bill, I think I want to ask, we have about 3 minutes, and... first of all, when you said that one of the congregations had founded Providence, Rhode Island, that was an aha moment. They used the word Providence because of the divine provider. We're in 2020 America, and what do you think about Providence and his hand on 2020 America?
Well, we're seeing people coming out and telling voter fraud that has taken place, and it's very similar to Benedict Arnold. And just in a minute here, Benedict Arnold was the hero of the Battle of Saratoga. He got wounded in the leg, and so he's in Philadelphia as the military governor. And there's a girl, Peggy Shippen, whose father is a loyalist. And anyway, they fall in love and get married, but she wants a big house, and he doesn't have any money, and he gets passed over for some promotion. So she nags him to betray America. And so Benedict Arnold meets with a spy, John Andre, and by this time he's in charge of West Point. And the John Andre spy is leaving with a map of West Point in his stocking, and he's going back across no man's land, and he's almost to the British territory when some soldiers dressed as German Hessians come out of the woods. And if he would have kept his mouth shut, he could have made it across. But instead, John Andre says, it's good to see men on our side. And they say, what do you mean our side? He goes, well, you're a German Hessian. You're with the British. And he goes, no, we're Americans dressed as German Hessians. And anyway, they search him once, twice. They're about to let him go. And finally, they make him take off his boot. And sagging in the stocking is a map of West Point.
Wow.
And he tries to talk his way out of it. They say, you're going to talk to our boss. Anyway, the ruse is up. And Benedict Arnold flees, and the one general, Nathaniel Green, says, treason of the blackest dye was yesterday discovered. General Arnold, who commanded at West Point, was about to give the American cause a deadly wound, if not fatal stab. Happily, the treason had been discovered. The providential train of circumstances which led to its discovery affords the most convincing proof that the liberties of America are the object of divine protection. So here we are about to be betrayed. on the inside by somebody that was a famous general, Benedict Arnold. And lo and behold, at the last minute, they make him take off his boot and see this. And so you see people trying to betray America today. And the last minute, you have some people saying, wait just a second. Let's look a little deeper at this. And so it's a critical time, not just for America, but for the world. If America goes in this globalist direction that some of the politicians want to go in, we will see the greatness of our country dissipate quickly. China, Russia, the Sharia, Islam, Iran, they will all become more aggressive. And anyway, it's a bad future. That's why it's important for us to return to the God of our fathers. And for us, all liberty is individual. All repentance is individual. It's not out there somewhere people repent. No, it's each one of us personally repent, get back to the first work, seek the Lord. And in that case, we can pray that the Lord have mercy on us and give us some more time to let his will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
Oh, most definitely. Bill Fetterer, this has just been absolutely fascinating. You can find his books at AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. And we did a show earlier in the week about great books. I think that these books would qualify as great books. Bill Fetterer, thank you so much. I wish a very blessed Thanksgiving to you and your loved ones. And let's stay in touch.
Thank you, Kim, and happy Thanksgiving to all the listeners.
Thank you. And our quote for today is from Bill Fetterer. He says, for people to rule themselves in a republic, they must have virtue. For a tyrant to rule in a tyranny, he must use fear. So my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.